Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the KE Report, doing a little bit of politics, a little bit of what we consider editorializing. I have an old friend on the line with me right now. His name is John Horvat. John is very active in non-secular circles. John, you've been on the show before, by the way, and I certainly appreciate that. John, you came out with some interesting commentary on Joe Biden's acceptance speech, which you felt were, I don't want to put words in your mouth, let me just say you had some very interesting commentary on that acceptance speech. Can you share it with us?
Yes, I watched the whole thing, obviously,
sure.
And I was very impressed by the fact that it was a very religious event. Despite the separation of church and state, there was a lot of Christian imagery. There was a lot of religious imagery. There was prayer right in the middle of it for
right.
America and for the COVID victims. There was a priest that gave the invocation and the final blessing by a Protestant minister. And after the whole thing, the Amazing Grace. I mean, it was definitely had a religious message, and I was very impressed by that because it was not just a religious message; it was also a Christian message.
You right.
know, it was not Allah. It was not any other. It's the Christian God that he was invoking.
Right.
So I thought that was very impressive. How that came out. That that all these things that we're not supposed to, are politically incorrect. For the inauguration, they definitely had their role.
John, explain to me, if you would, exactly what you mean by that.
Well, he invoked a God whose law he ignores. That's the thing. That's the contradiction of the whole thing, because he was constantly invoking God, but when it comes to actual policies, the policies that he wants to put in place, most people admit it's probably one of the most anti-Christian platforms that any president has ever run upon. So there definitely is a contradiction there.
Well, I'm not saying I agree or disagree at this point. I think there's a lot of showmanship involved right now in D.C. Mm-hmm. But, John, let me ask you this question. Let's talk about the contradictions, and I'd like to opine on that also. You're on, sir. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, the contradictions, Christian law is the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are a summary of natural law, which is
right.
Basically how we should act. That's valid for all peoples and all places and all times. And so he went pretty much against all the commandments. He has gone against them. I mean, from the point of view of the fourth, the fifth, the sixth commandment, obviously he's for procured abortion, same-sex marriage, the whole LGBTQ
right.
agenda. So, I mean, he definitely contradicts the Christian God who he invoked. And then you have the seventh and tenth commandment by his socialist agenda, because those two commandments defend private property: thou shalt not steal or covet thy neighbor's goods.
Right.
And I mean, there are others as well. The cynical nature of the inauguration, the second commandment, the eighth commandment, not to take the Lord's name in vain, and to
right.
Perjure yourself in that sense. So, I mean, I think there is a lot of contradictions there that really just stood out for me when I saw the whole the inauguration address.
Well, I think that's really interesting, because you're not just giving an opinion here. You are a religious scholar, and you can back everything you said up with, black and white proof. And I have a tendency to say, I'm not the religious scholar, John, that you are, but I have to say, mm-hmm. I know pretty well what I'm talking about when it comes to non-secular issues. It's been a very huge interest in my life for quite some time now. And mm-hmm. I'm very, very concerned about the secularity that's going on in our country today. My comment on the gay issue, purely and simply, is I know how you feel. I know how most Catholics feel. My personal opinion is it's not for me to judge. and I will not judge, but I know how God's going to judge it, because I've read his opinion on that on four different occasions, three in the Old Testament and one in the New Testament, sir.
Right. Oh, yes, exactly that. No, it definitely is. It is an issue, and you know, these kind of things have a tendency to impose themselves upon society, so that if you don't, you know, toe the line, you could be persecuted. And you know, we're seeing this, you know, even just in social media, how people who say certain things or post certain things now can be are being persecuted because of it.
Yep. Well, I'm very concerned about the First Amendment, actually, which you were talking about, John, and that is the concept of free speech. I agree 1,000% that I think the First Amendment is very definitely in danger. Not necessarily the Second Amendment, the Second Amendment, because I think the NRA and the majority of Americans have that one covered pretty well. But it's what's going on right now with the First Amendment really, really frightens me. I mean, in the news yesterday, hardcore, black and white, you are not allowed to make comments in society anymore that could be construed as being negative towards the Chinese. The virus, it's against the law right now to call the COVID virus the Wuhan virus. I find that to be absolutely appalling, John.
Right, yeah, exactly, because, I mean, the whole purpose of speech is truth, you know, to convey the truth, to tell the truth. And if you cannot do that, you frustrate the very purpose of what it was created for. Oh, and that's what's happening.
I agree 1,000%. John, you haven't been on the show for a long time. We picked up a number of stations since you were on before.
Oh,
tell us a little. Yeah, it's great. It's great. That and $2 will buy me a cup of coffee. Won't even buy me a cup of coffee, John. But let me ask you, I'm doing this out of a passion. Let me ask you a question. Describe to our new listeners, if you would, a little bit about your organization. You got about 2 minutes.
Okay, I'm with an organization called Tradition Family Property, and we're a civic organization of Catholic inspiration, and we defend Tradition Family Property through books and publications, educational programs, campus ministries, all sorts of things along that line. We just throughout the country, and I'm an author of the book Return to Order, which is a discussion of where we went wrong in our culture and our economy.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I got a copy of that book, and it really is worth reading. There's no question about that. I think one thing that Dr. Chuck and I have talked about numerous times, Dr. Chuck being a very avid born-again Christian, is that rather than put a person down, rather than not agree with a person, don't not listen to a person just because they have different ideas. Listen to everybody, and I'm sure your organization, I know you and I and Dr. Chuck have similar philosophy. There's no question about that. We believe what we believe, but we're not trying to start a fight with anybody. We're not trying to be, as I say numerous times, the prettiest baby in the nursery, correct?
Right, that's a good way of putting it.
Everybody's got to make their own decision, and we know what we believe is right. My stance, for example, on the gay community, I believe 1,000% that God is the final judge, and I bet you you feel the same way. Anyway, how's the campus ministry going, John? Good?
Well, I mean, we do go on campus. I mean, now there are not too many campuses open, you know, because of the whole
COVID,
COVID thing, but we do go on campuses. And we do address hot button issues and engage and make our views known. Sometimes it's not to the liking of the other side, but we definitely try to get our point across.
Well, all you have to do is get people to listen. And I think if you're talking to somebody who's not willing to listen, in my opinion, personally, John, I don't think they're worth talking to. My opinion, John Horvath. Thank you so much, sir.
It's always great to be on the show.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Continuing my discussion with John Horvat. You know, John and his organization represent a couple of very, very important elements of my life. And I say that because I'm very, very concerned about our country, both from a secular and from a non-secular standpoint. I get most of my secular information, obviously, from my Bible study, but I also get an awful lot of information from John Horvat. John's a great guy. We need to do what he is supporting with his organization, and we need to do it now in our country. John, we've never really talked in depth about your organization. Mm-hmm. Let's do that right now. Give as complete an explanation, sir, as you can.
Okay. Well, I'm with an organization called the American Society for the Defense of Tradition, Family, and Property, TFP, and we're a civic organization of Catholic inspiration that defends tradition, family, property, because these are the three pillars of any civilization.
Yes,
you have
are.
To have those. And you, without them, the civilization perishes. And so we do this through books, publications, educational work, campus ministries, seminars, all sorts of activities, street campaigns. We try to get the word out to influence public opinion, especially public opinion in general.
Well, I have to tell you, somebody really has to take a stand right now. I take as much of a stand as I can on our radio show because I am very, very nervous about the direction mm-hmm. that our country is headed right now. We need solid values. We need solid values. We need a good world to live in, a great environment to raise children in. Next mm-hmm. week, I will be interviewing a representative from Imprimis magazine, which is a newsletter that comes out from Hillsdale College. We need to get more mm-hmm. people like yourself and the people from Imprimis on the show because we do have a good audience. Our audience really is a common sense group of people, and we need to get support from them for the two organizations, yours and Hillsdale College also. You guys are making a big difference, I think, in the country, at least on the college level. But let me ask you a question, John. When it comes to the type of response that you get when you visit colleges, universities, et cetera, tell me a little bit about that response. And is it ever combative?
It usually is combative because we go to the campuses with the hot button issues of the day.
Yep.
Abortion is one of them. Today it's been around a long time, but nonetheless, it is very hot button. The marriage issue, also transgender issue, all those issues are almost guaranteed to get you into a very heated discussion. And usually it's a discussion that's they just don't use reason anymore. It's not a rational discussion. It's usually being shouted out or spit upon or, you know, just
oh, come
all
on,
sorts
John.
Of identities.
You got kids that are spitting on you?
Oh, we do. Yes. Doesn't take much. They don't know how to answer the arguments in favor of these issues, and so they just get very desperate. So we do have go on campaigns. We do have a lot of support on campus as well. You know, students who are very relieved to find people who support tradition, family, property on their campus. You know, that sometimes they can't believe it, but they come up to you, they shake your hand, they just say, well, it's great to have you on campus. But the other side is exactly the opposite.
Boy, I got to tell you, Johnny, that is just a real, real shame in my opinion. You know, I'm sitting here, admittedly, I'm a senior citizen, but, you know, my values have never changed since day one, I have to say that. It mm-hmm. boggles my mind when you have very specific advice given in both the Old and the New Testament and how people say, the only response that I've gotten whenever I bring that up, quite frankly, is a former mm-hmm. friend of mine said, I don't believe in the Bible. That's simply a work of fiction. You can't prove it. I don't believe in God. You can't prove his existence. My comment to that is I can prove it by my own experience, which I think is a pretty, you can't be much more truthful than that, John.
Right. Yeah. It's you're getting into very, very basic things there when you get to that point, and you know, it's often very difficult to argue those points, or it's pretty futile.
Yeah.
I mean, but even today, you're getting into more even more obvious points that shouldn't be debatable, but things like identity or existence or do you really exist? Or who do you think you are? What do you think you are? You know, these students, you say, oh, what if you're a tree? And he says, I could be a tree. You know, these are the kind of things you get on campus that are very, very basic. And, you know, the foundations of logic are, you know, at stake here, not just moral issues, that the independent issues that you're debating.
Well, I certainly don't think abortion is an independent issue. You know, I have a friend.
Right.
I have a friend who I do a Bible study with, who's a gynecologist, and he refuses to vote for any member of the Conservative Party because he said, "In my 40, 50 years of practice as a gynecologist, I never, ever, ever experienced a rational reason for a woman who wanted an abortion." And he's that hardcore about it, and he won't do it.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it is, exactly that. It's not only a religious issue, it also has to do with natural law, which is the moral code that's embedded upon our souls, you know,
yeah.
Regardless of how you believe. It's every man has that conscience, that those rules that are set upon our souls that should govern us, and we know what is wrong when we violate those rules.
Yeah, we certainly do. Let me ask you one question. This is a little bit out there, but not really, and I don't want to go into it at length. We can talk about this next time when you're on the program, but I read your missive today about the Pope's stance on transgender issues and the Pope's stance on abortion. I find that to be absolutely mind-boggling that the head of my church would have that stance. And you know what it is.
Right, yeah. It's not to say, the church is made up of men, and men are fallible. They are not gods.
I guess that's one way to put it. They will make mistakes.
We've had bad popes in the past. We've had bad leaders in the past that have led us astray, but that God is in charge, and
that's
we have
right.
to be confident that he is in charge. But we do have to deal with bad leaders, both in the secular field and the religious field. They're out there, and the crisis is very grave.
It's very great, to say the least. John, I appreciate you taking some time to do this. I know we're recording a little bit early this week, specifically on Friday. Thanks much for your time, sir. You're a great individual. You are really making a positive difference in humanity.
All right. Thank you very much. Great to be on.
Okay, John. Thanks. I'll put it up. It'll air tomorrow. Thanks, man. See ya.
Okay. All right. God bless.
Well, God bless you.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Second hour of the KE Report. I'm devoting this entire hour to my friend Stephen Lieb. Stephen lives in New York, manages money, and knows as much about gold as virtually anybody who I know. And keep in mind, I know all the players because I spent 40 years in that sector. Stephen is absolutely brilliant. I want to open this particular segment, Stephen, and we are recording this on Thursday, ladies and gentlemen, so I'm going under the assumption that what's going on today will not change, at least for the weekend show. First of all, we have a live gold and a live silver chart on our homepage, and gold as of right now is trending downward. Now, we're not down what I would call significantly. We're down probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 50, 55 bucks an ounce. Do you see this being a long-term trend, Stephen?
No, by no means. I see this as being almost preparation for a major change.
Okay.
And likely to possibly will continue for another, I don't know, month or two. And I think you'll see things start to change sometime in the sometime toward the end of the second quarter. I think that the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements,
right.
one of the major aspects of the gold market and a lot of markets right now is that these aren't physical markets. I mean, the price you're looking at for gold right now, 1771 or 3 or whatever, it's a price that's created by speculators,
right,
who are able to trade on, you know, incredible amounts of margin. It's a price. I hate using words like manipulated. But it's a price that there's a lot of control when you have this much margin, and you have a lot of, you know, banks together that have a lot of control. You see funny things that happen, and
yep,
I happen to be somebody who watches this stuff at night, and very, very often when there's no gold trading, I mean gold trading is very, very quiet, Al. You'll all of a sudden see gold drop by $10 or $15.
Right.
Now, that means that you had a big order, sell order placed, and you know, there were no buyers around. And you know, anyone that, first of all, has that kind of money to place that kind of order is not your ordinary citizen. It's not, you know, stupid money. It's, you know, it's big money. And it's placed to, you know, have an effect, have a psychological effect. And you saw this before. I mean, you saw it in 2013 and 2014 when they wanted to keep the price of gold, I think, you know, within a certain range. And I think they were pretty much where they wanted to be. My guess is 1750 or so, maybe a little lower, maybe 1740. But this time, what's really different is you have the world, the developing world, is really growing. There's a tremendous emphasis on shifting energies, and how this is displaying itself is in terms of how other commodities are playing out. On a day like today, with the market down 2%, the stock market down 2%, you see base metals, one of the indexes that I follow. I don't have a chart in front of me, but you see DBB, which stands for, you know, copper, I think aluminum, or I can't remember, nickel, zinc, et cetera. The base metals are down 0.5%. Copper's down less than the market, though copper has had a tremendous run. I mean, you know, from about 250 or so to 425. It's historic. It's very close to all-time highs. It's not even going down as much as the stock market. This is the difference. You have commodities en masse going up together. Gold is kind of the laggard, which is very, very unusual. I mean, it's so unusual that it's, you know, I can't find a counterexample, another example. And it does suggest that something is happening. And if I read those rules right, come the beginning of June, the Bank of International Settlements, who makes the rules, are going to, you know, one of those rules is going to be that banks are going to need 85% of capital to back up purchases and purchases of gold. It's going to take away a lot of the speculation. You're not going to be able to speculate on 5% holdings. And you know, gold is a big market, a multi-trillion-dollar market.
Right.
And, you know, you need a lot of money if you're going to deal in cash, or mostly in cash. My guess is that rule will be instituted gradually. I think most people are on board. I think most major bankers, central bankers, see that the world can no longer run just on the dollar, and you're going to see the beginning of a major, major shift, and gold's going to be in the center of that shift. And I think ultimately prices for gold are going to go much higher than almost anybody thinks. And looking back on what you're seeing today and what you've seen lately, it's not going to even show up on the chart. That is my feeling. So yes,
Steve, can you explain that to me a little bit? I don't understand exactly that statement. Can you explain it to me?
Sure. What's going on right now is I think the bankers, the central bankers of the world, are preparing for new rules that are coming in from the Bank of International Settlements. The Bank of International Settlements is usually called the Federal Reserve of all the other banks, the Bank of Banks.
Right.
It basically makes the rules that govern what our central bank and other central banks from China to Germany to, I mean, from China to the Euro to Israel to all the other central banks adhere to those rules. And those rules right now allow these banks to hold and trade gold on, you know, very, very low margins. They don't have to have a lot of cash. They don't have to have a lot of assets to back up their trading. It's a very, very speculative market. And that's going to change. And once that changes, it means most trading of gold will be physical, that the banks will lose any sort of control they may have in changing the price of gold, affecting the price of gold. And that will make a massive difference. That will sort of pave the way for gold taking a place or having a role in what I call a new monetary system. And it's so necessary to have that. You cannot, you know, China is certainly, you know, a driver in this, but it's not just China at this point. I think it's the Europeans. It's certainly Russia. It's certainly many, many other countries. You know, part of what informed me writing this book was knowing that China believed gold was a metal that could back up other currencies, not just back up the yuan, which it effectively does right now, but to back up kind of a basket of currencies. But again, the key here is you have to sort of transform the trading of gold into a physical market. You know, I mean, you know, could have some margin. You know, you don't have to put up 100% to buy it, but you have to put up a lot more than what you have to put up now, maybe 50, 60%, I mean, eventually up to 85%. That's going to make it much like the Chinese market, which right now is a physical market. The biggest physical market for gold is not London, it's not the U.S., it's China. You know, when you buy gold in China, you almost always take delivery. When you
Mr. Lee, we got to take a real quick commercial break. I want to continue this discussion here right after the commercial break. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. We're going to be right back. Hey, welcome back. Here to wrap up KER Politics. I was going to wrap it up with Stephen Leeb, but in light of some of the news that's out right now in the political centers, I'm going to wrap it up with my friend Jim McKinney. Fox News, this is very, very interesting. Dozens of House Democrats want Biden to give up sole authority to launch nuclear weapons. That is a change that, quite frankly, terrifies me. I'm going to give Jim the mic here in just a second. That was coupled with another story. Dan Bongino says, my Secret Service sources tell me how bad Biden's condition is right now. What I think is interesting is Hannity asked him the following question. You're a former Secret Service agent. Are you saying that if we were to bring on Secret Service agents, they would confirm what you are saying? Bongino's response is, well, they call it the Secret Service for a reason, but I maintain a lot of contacts outside of even law enforcement. And I'm telling you from what I've heard from people in my network, everyone knows how bad it is. Now,
We can't confirm that. That's just something that Fox was willing to run in conjunction with the story on the Democrats who want Biden to give up their sole authority to reach to launch nuclear weapons. I believe that that story in particular is credible. We discussed it at our book club yesterday. A number of guys read it, and they asked me what my input on that was. Having said that, Jimmy, what's this all about?
Well, what it's showing is actually a very disturbing foreign policy and national security issue that actually is probably, in my view, one of the most important considerations that we've had probably in my lifetime.
Uh-huh.
So the U.S. policy for nuclear control has been deterrence for over 60 years. The idea is that we would respond rapidly and quickly and could potentially act if an adversary would use nuclear weapons. It kept the lid on nuclear action. In fact, we've seen no nuclear explosions or detonations or attacks in that period, since the Second World War. The foundation of that is direct command and control authority at the presidential level with the commander in chief. We elect a president on the assumption that they would be able to make that decision rationally, wisely. It's one of the most critical elements of any decision a president would ever make. It potentially means the end of humanity if not done well. Now, the question becomes, is Joe Biden, capable of making that decision? And what we see is a letter from Democrats, not the opposing party making accusations, but from 31 Democrats, written, started by Jimmy Panetta from Carmel and Ted Lieu from California, as well as 29 other Democrats that are asking Joe Biden to share decision-making authority over the nuclear launch codes with the Vice President Kamala Harris, with the Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, and then require a declaration of war from Congress before using nuclear weapons. That would completely undermine deterrent policy that has kept stability in the nuclear world against Russia, with the largest nuclear weapons arsenal on the planet, with China and a growing nuclear arsenal capability, with North Korea, a radical rogue regime with nuclear weapons, and potentially with Iran, again, a theocracy that is bent on destabilizing the region through terrorist actions and potentially devastating, the region. This is the biggest concern: is Joe Biden capable of making these decisions as president? And it's a serious, serious question people need to ask.
Yeah, I just want to jump in for a second and bring one thing up. It strikes me that if Joe Biden were all together, for lack of better terms, he would really strongly consider what his legacy is going to be. If he becomes the first president to approve of something like this, I would have to say that his legacy is not very good. And I would also say that it would only be proven beyond a shadow of a doubt if, in fact, at some point in the next, I would say, 8 years, if he were asked to step down. He's going to look like a fool.
Well, and I actually am concerned. My biggest concern is whether or not he's making any of these decisions. And, of course, who is behind the scenes that are pulling the strings with his chief of staff and the other people that are trying to cover up. And we do have reporting that says everyone knows that he's in significant cognitive decline. Again, as you mentioned, there's reports out there from numerous ways, but we clearly can see it in public responses, the numerous gaffes and the mistakes and the fact that we know that Kamala Harris is taking phone calls from foreign leaders or making phone calls to foreign leaders, which would indicate basically concern whether or not he's capable of making those having those conversations without potential problems. That's a frightening thought for the world's Western leader, basically the most powerful position in the world with the biggest capabilities, the largest economy. It's making, I think, me and many other professionals, I don't care, left, right, in the middle, making people very, very concerned what's happening inside Washington right now.
Jimmy, let me ask you a question. I want to get your opinion on Dan Bongino. I've been watching him off and on for quite some time now. The conclusion that I have come to is he's climbed a long way up from being a guy who just does podcasts. Number one, I didn't realize that he is a former Secret Service guy. That is what, in effect, Fox is inferring here. Tell me your opinion about him, would you? Just your opinion. This is not facts, you guys listening. It's an opinion by a highly credible source. Highly credible source being Jim McKinney.
So Dan Bongino has a long career, actually, in law enforcement.
He does.
And he was a Secret Service agent and did presidential details. So, yes, he's credible in his understanding. He's definitely a conservative. He's definitely concerned about the future of this nation, and he speaks very strongly about it. And I think he has a lot of inside understanding and a lot of knowledge and a lot of connections. The left hates him. They want to silence him. Well, that would indicate to me that he's probably hitting some buttons that maybe they're concerned about. So, yeah, I think Dan Bongino is trying to do the right thing, and he was a committed, loyal guy that kept his mouth shut until he retired, and now he's speaking up very strongly and loudly.
Wow.
I like the guy.
You know, yeah, the only comment I can make here is that I read some headlines this morning prepping for this thing, and A lot of the headlines I read centered around the fact, goodbye America. You know what? I have to kind of agree with that, and it really scares me because I'm the kind of person that has always wanted to be part of the solution, not the problem. I really would be like to be part of the solution here, and the only way that I think I can do it is to continue doing this radio show.
I think more people, especially the press right now, the mainstream media sources are in the more people in this administration, the mainstream media are trying to protect Joe Biden than they're trying to lead this country in a positive direction. They are paying off the administration are paying off political debts for the election. They are looking at these very extreme views that people would not expect in the past, that would not support. And the vast majority, I think, are very concerned about them. Second Amendment rights, these transgender issues. There are people, you know, the average American does not support those types of philosophies. And they're very concerned about the stability and safety of our nation. The people inside the Beltway live a completely different world than the rest of the country. I think the rest of the country is getting very worried. I'm an optimistic guy for America because I do believe in time these things come out. The only way they don't come out is if big tech, media censors, as well as just the public opinion pressure from Twitter mobs and social media activists silence voices. If we continue to speak out and people question the issues out there, we can protect this nation for the future. If we silence which is what Twitter and Facebook and many of the mainstream media outlets are doing right now, or just protect someone, then we will not survive. So we have to step up and stop that.
We've only got 20 seconds here. I want to wrap it up with the headline from the current edition of Imprimis, very excellent publication put out by Hillsdale College. Alan Bukar wrote an article. It's called Who is in Control? The Need to Rein in Big Tech. I am going to post that on the website as soon as I get permission from Hillsdale College to do that. Jimmy, this is Gary. Thanks so much, bud.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.